Preston Armstead Playhouse. The National Broadcasting Company presents the Nelson Armstead Playhouse, bringing to life the most powerful and compelling short stories ever written, and featuring America's master storyteller, Nelson Armstead.
Good evening. The story the Playhouse Company and I have for you tonight was written by Stephen Vincent Benet. This is the story of a man and a woman and a piece of bread. And on that piece of bread, our couple were courageous enough to stake everything they had, even their love. This is the story of Elementals. The human soul is a house of many fantastic chambers. But for most of us, the most curious of these chambers are the least frequented. It is only the elemental forces of the naked and crying soul that will suffice to move the doors of these chambers. The elemental powers, fear, hunger, love, and hate. And this is just. Just that the doors should open seldom. For the man upon whom they have opened, even for an instant, will never be the same again. When young Sherwood Latimer accepted the invitation of his temporary employer, John Slake, to dinner for two, he had no idea of opening these doors. No, nor of encountering anything more elemental than a well-cooked meal. As he walked up Madison Avenue with his fiancée, Catherine Vane, toward the big, ugly Slake mansion, he felt no forewarning, no intuition of what was to come. It was any summer evening, he and Catherine, hand in hand, hating to part even for a little while.
Catherine, I wish you were coming to Slake's, too.
So do I. I'm hungry.
Where will you eat?
Oh, in my room. It's cheaper. I'll boil an egg and open a can of sardines.
Well, I sit down the guinea hen under glass.
Oh, well, don't worry about me. Eat lots, darling. You'll see him.
You're a fine one to talk. In this half light, you look almost transparent. Like a beautiful ghost. Mm-hmm. Oh, Catherine, I do love you.
Yes, Sherry.
I've got to get out of that grimy office. If we only had some money.
Oh, will you be making more this fall with your assistant professorship?
More, but not enough. Not enough for us to marry.
Well, maybe after this year.
Yes, another year of waiting. Oh, Catherine, I want so much for us. I want it now.
I know. What does Mr. Slake want with you? He's never asked you to dinner before.
I don't know. To talk about the Guicciardini translation I did, maybe.
Maybe he wants you to do another.
Bad as we need the money, I'd hate to. I don't like him, Catherine. He's like some gigantic cat, sleek, purring. Yet there's always the tiger there underneath, ready to spring.
I'd like to meet him.
I wouldn't want you to. I don't know whether it's his money that gives him that sense of power or what, but when I'm around him, I feel as if I'm nothing more than a match stem. He could twist me, crush me, do whatever he wanted with me.
They had come now to the big, frowning Slake residence. In the shadows, two ever-present private detectives stood guard. Recognizing Latimer, they nodded. For a moment, he stood holding tightly to Catherine's hand. Then he turned and walked quickly up the steps. She watched until the big wrought iron doors clanged behind him, and he was swallowed up in the recesses of the gloomy old house. Dinner with Slake was a ritual. He spoke little. All through the seven courses, the younger man kept thinking, "He wants something from me. I can feel it. Why doesn't he say what it is?" But it wasn't until coffee was served that Slake settled over his back in his chair and began to talk.
I've just been over your Guicciardini translation, Latimer. Excellent. Excellent.
Why, thank you, sir.
Not at all. I find it rather surprising, though, that you should be so at home with a man like Guicciardini.
Why, sir?
Because you're a romantic, Latimer. I can tell by the look of you. thin, shabby, intense. Whereas your friend Guicciardini was a consummate realist.
He was a cynic, completely devoid of any kind of human feeling.
Precisely. And because he was without emotion, he could understand better than most the forces that rule this curious sideshow we call human existence.
What forces?
The elementals. There are only three. Three prime movers in this vagrant piece of oddity we call the soul. Fear, hate, hunger.
What about love? I mean real love. The love of a man for a woman.
Bosh, my friend. It's pure bosh. There are three elementals and only three. Fear, hate, hunger. Put love up against any of them. Against hunger. I'll give you an example of your love put to a test. From Guicciardini. Your translation of it was flawless. It's in the chapter on the merry diversions of Prince Alessandro. You remember? There were two lovers in Alessandro's court, you'll recall. Like you, they too believed in the magic power of love. And Alessandro decided to put this love to a test. If they won, the young man was to have a dukedom. If they lost, they would both be executed. Unfortunately, the test was by hunger. Elemental hunger. For 10 days, the lovers were locked up in adjoining rooms. Strong glass partition between them, so that they could see each other suffering, but could not communicate. They were given water, lest they die of thirst and spoil the experiment. Water, but no food. On the 10th day, the glass partition was removed and one piece of bread thrown in. You know the rest.
Yes, I know.
Hunger won. Won over love. Guicciardini writes that the lovers had entwined themselves into a deadly knot in their death grapple for that one small piece of bread.
Alessandro was a mad monster, a fiend. It wasn't a fair test. Starvation, slow starvation, and then suddenly giving them food. They lost their heads. It was too hard.
Wait. If love is stronger than hunger, no test is too hard. I think that I have proved my point.
No. No, you haven't.
Would your love be big enough, Latimer? Would it?
Why? I don't know. It's preposterous. Such a thing couldn't happen now.
But suppose it could. Would you put your love to such a test?
Yes. Yes, I would.
You are absolutely sure of yourself and the lady in question?
Yes, I am.
Then suppose we try it.
What are you talking about?
Now, wait. You haven't heard the stakes. All I would ask is that you sign a written contract that if you should lose, you would give up your present teaching career and put yourself at my disposal for the next 10 years.
Are you serious?
From the young lady, I should require nothing. The loss of your career and the humiliation would be quite sufficient to make you both wholly miserable if you did marry. Now, should the test be withstood successfully, and I would not require of you a longer period than 20 minutes to be confronted with a piece of bread after your starvation. Should you both refuse the bread, a check of $10,000 would be delivered to you that same day. $10,000, Latimer.
Your proposition is ridiculous. This is the 20th century.
The 20th century. Exactly. The century of centuries where money is power. I have $10,000, Latimer. 100 times 10,000. And you are without any funds at all. If you will pardon my saying so. Now, on the 3rd floor of this very house, Latimer, there's a little suite of soundproof rooms. We could carry out our little experiment there in perfect peace. The young lady could have one room, you another. I would have a window cut between so you could observe one another. And, of course, I would visit you twice a day.
Mr. Slake, I'm very tired.
You'll have no food, of course, but all the water you wished. And in consideration of the fact that neither of you possesses a Renaissance physique, I would be perfectly willing to shorten the period of starvation to 7 days. I can see at last you're interested. You accept?
Of course not.
You amaze me. $10,000. You'll never have another chance like this in all your life.
I'll be frank with you, Mr. Slake. I do need the money. If you'd made your insane offer to me alone, perhaps... But as it is...
Of course, the young lady. Oh, by the way, I hope you will give my sincerest congratulations to the lady of your choice. To Miss...
Vane. Catherine Vane.
Vane? Not one of the Newport Vanes.
Oh, you wouldn't know her. She works at Columbia in the secretary's office. She... What are you doing? What are you writing on the tablecloth?
No, nothing, Miss Latimer. Nothing. Just a little reminder. You see, I have a whim. A whim of wishing to meet Miss Vane in person.
Slake, don't you go to her with it. I forbid it.
Ah. You're afraid, Latimer. Afraid she might agree.
She's the one woman I know who would have the courage. Slake, I beseech you, if there's any good in you, let us alone. Let us alone.
Wallpaper was covered with bluebirds.
5.
21 bluebirds to each wall.
6.
Latimer knew. He'd counted 7. Them so many times. To stop the counting, Latimer dug his teeth 9. Into the flesh of his wrist. The sudden sharp pain was good. For a minute, it relieved the other pain. The dull, thick pain in the pit of his stomach. The gnawing pain that never went away. And then, suddenly, as if waking from a dream, he jerked his arm from his mouth... For a long time, he sat stupefied, looking at the little white dents his teeth had made in his wrist. An uncontrollable shudder went over his body.
No. It's impossible. I couldn't have come to that stage yet. It's only the fourth day. The fourth day of the fast.
Three more days. He knew it was three because Slake came twice a day and already he'd been in 7 times. As soon as it was dark, he would come again. That would make 8 times. 2 into 8 makes 4. 4 days, only 3 more to go. 3 more days of this torment. And then the test.
The test. Suppose I fail her. Suppose I snatch the bread from her. Fight her for it. Suppose... Oh, God. Why did we listen to that madman?
After Slake had talked to Catherine, there had been no stopping her. She'd made it sound so easy. Latimer remembered how easy she made it sound.
Why, Sherry, darling, just think. It's everything we want. Everything. And it's ours if we only have the courage to take it.
And I will be kinder to you than Alessandro was to his couple. I will allow each of you 3 books. The Bible, the Koran, the Gita.
Good. We can make a comparative study of religions in our spare time.
Yes. In your spare time. You'll have one inconvenience, though, I fear. I cannot allow either of you soap or toothpaste.
I understand. They're edible, aren't they?
They'd fooled Slake in one respect, anyhow. Thanks to his giving them the books, they could talk to each other, pointing out what they wanted to say. He walked unsteadily across the room to the little window. She got up and came toward him, book in hand. It was the Bible. He smiled. He had a sentence for her in his Bible. He pointed it out.
The lions do lack and suffer. Hunger.
She shook her head with mock dolefulness and started turning leaves rapidly.
Happy shalt thou be, and it shall be with thee.
Her finger ran along the line.
thy wife.
Oh, my dear. My dear.
Her mouth made a soundless darling. Latimer crawled across the room, sank back in the bed. Now to sleep.
Oh, God, please let me sleep. Don't let me think. Don't let me think about food.
Drowsiness came easily. Sleep was harder. In spite of himself, he dreamed of food. The walls of the room had turned to meat. He ate and ate, but as soon as he swallowed a morsel, it seemed to vanish into air. It never reached his stomach, and his jaws ached from chewing, chewing. Slake was there, eating deliberately, gluttonously. He could hear his jaws crunching. And all the time, Slake was urging him on.
Eat, Latimer. Eat, 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 eat!
Good morning, Mr. Latimer. Oh, Mr. Latimer. My dear Mr. Latimer, I really am surprised. Teeth marks in the beautiful leather Bible cover. And what's this? The fly page missing?
No. No, I couldn't have. I couldn't have done it.
No wonder you're shocked. A man of your refinement eating paper. Why, your mouth is full of it. Disgusting. I must remove the books at once. I had forgotten they might be misapplied.
No, the books. Catherine and I, don't take the books. Don't take the books, please. Please.
But Slake was gone. Latimer got up with effort, looked in the mirror. His cheeks were hollower, eyes larger, clothes hard to put on, too many buttons, too hard. He began the long trip across the room to the little window. But pain took him up in its heavy, soft hands and squeezed him like fruit. He sat down. In a minute, he would go and see Catherine. Now he must rest. He tried to count the number of times Slake had been there to remember what day it was. But instead, it was bluebirds he was counting. Then, like an answer to prayer, a thought came to him. Slake would be here soon, and Slake would know what day it was. Only, if Slake knew he was confused, he wouldn't tell him. He had to trick him into telling him. Trick Slake.
Good morning, Mr. Latimer. Still no complaints?
Still no complaints. After all, it won't be for very much longer.
True, true. A mere question of hours, shall we say?
Hours. Hours. Yes. Hours.
Or shall we say, days?
Days. Is it really days?
I'm afraid you'll have to puzzle that out for yourself.
Slake was gone. He still didn't know what day it was. Slake had tricked him. But wait, Catherine would know. He'd go and ask her. When he reached the window, he was drenched with sweat. He would have to sit down a minute. He eased himself into the chair, shut his eyes. He was dreaming of all the food he'd ever eaten when the sound came somewhere near, like the noise of a moth beating itself against a lamp. He raised his head. Somewhere he'd heard that sound before. He dragged himself to his feet, gripping the windowsill for support. At the other side of the window was a face, a waxen face, and the face was trying to smile. It was trying to speak, too. But his mind was too blurred to read what it said with its soundless moving lips. All he knew was that the face was Catherine's. Catherine's.
And she was starving to death. Suddenly she tottered.
Catherine.
Sank to the floor, a little white heap.
Catherine. Catherine. Catherine.
He fell back from the window and covered his face with his hands. He didn't know how long the fit of ugly weeping lasted. But when it was over, his mind, in spite of the intermittent burnings of fever, was quite composed. He knew what he had to do. After a long time, he heard Slake's key in the lock. He quieted himself with a straining effort. He must speak slowly and calmly.
I'm afraid I shall have to withdraw from the contest, Mr. Slake.
Really? When only a few more hours would have brought us to the most interesting part. May I ask why?
Catherine.
I see. You're afraid of the test to come. Afraid you might kill her for the food.
No. No, I saw her. She fell.
Only fainted. I've just seen her. As to your quitting now, Latimer, if you'll recall our contract, neither party can be released without full written consent from the other.
Then go. Go and ask her.
I am sorry, Latimer, but Miss Vane refuses. And therefore, by the terms of the agreement...
You're killing her. You devil from hell.
Would you, Mr. Latimer? Would you? What an exhibition of temper. What a pitiful exhibition.
Then he flung Latimer from him as if he were made of paper and left the room. Latimer was alone now, alone with his hunger and that last glimpse of Catherine's face. Suddenly there was a quaking voice, not his own, it couldn't be, that kept talking to itself.
Catherine, food. Catherine, food.
On and on, the voice in its monotonous gibberish. And then suddenly Catherine, it was cursing somebody named Slake.
Devil from hell. Batman, let me out. Let me out. Give me food. Food, I tell you. Food. Food. Food.
Colors streaked before his eyes. Scarlet and purple and green. Until at last the voice was silent and there was nothing. Nothing but a collapse and a broken piece. A piece so complete and sightless that he had only one thought.
I am dying.
Then somebody was carrying him like a great shattered toy along a smooth paneled corridor. He was being put down on something that yielded and was soft. For a long time, he lay as a man might lie in warm water. After that measureless time, he turned his head and opened his eyes. He was lying on a couch in a room that was not the room in which he'd been tortured. 3 steps away from him was another couch. A figure lay on the couch, a woman. His eyes regarded her incuriously. After another long time, a faint prickling began to work on him. It ran all over him like the feet of a small, rapid animal. Then it settled, began to gnaw. He remembered now. He was hungry. That was it.
Food. Food.
There is the food on the floor for you. Eat it.
He raised himself with an immensity of effort. His eyes looked at the space between the two couches. There was something on a plate, something white and solid.
Bread. A piece of bread.
The figure in the couch had stirred now, too. It raised itself on an arm, its great eyes staring at the bread. Then its eyes lifted from the bread and looked into his without recognition. His muscles tensed. The thing on the couch had seen the bread. It wanted the food as much as he wanted it. For a long time, they lay there eyeing each other suspiciously like starving dogs over a bone. And then, slowly, like a thief, Latimer slid down from the couch. His hand reached out and touched the bread. He shivered.
Bread. Good bread.
Now, The woman on the couch made a tiny, despairing sound. Who was she? This strange, gaunt woman who was too weak to come down and fight him for the bread? Well, after he'd eaten, he would find out who she was, but not yet, not yet. Lust for the bread possessed him. His fingers closed over it. In a moment, he would feel the first sweet taste of it on his tongue. His hand began to go to his mouth, and then...
Who are you? Do you want my bread, too? You can't have it. It's mine.
The bread was almost in his mouth now.
Sure.
He drew it away and looked at the strange woman. She knew his name. Huh? How did she know it?
Sherry, dear, I'm so hungry.
Then there was a soft, bright shock in his mind. The whole room seemed to right itself as if it had been swinging upside down in space. It was Catherine, that lean, worn figure on the couch. Catherine, his Catherine, and she was hungry. Holding the hand with the bread in front of him, he began the immense journey across the floor to the other couch. Catherine was hungry. He must feed her. That was all. It was lucky somebody had left that piece of bread on the floor. He reached her side, rose clumsily to his knees. His arms went around her shoulder. One hand settled and was at rest in the curls of her hair. Uh-huh. The other hand held the bread to her mouth.
Bread. Good bread. Eat it. Catherine, darling.
No. No, Sherry. You eat first. You're hungrier.
Time. Time's up. It's over. The test is over. Don't you understand? You've won. You've won your $10,000. Pick up the bread. Eat it, you fools. Eat it!
But they were not listening. They'd forgotten Slake and the $10,000. They'd even forgotten the piece of bread. They were holding each other close.
Catherine, I do. I do love you.
Yes, Sheriff. Yes.
Dramatization of a short story by Stephen Vincent Panay entitled Elementals. Now, here again is your host, Nelson Armstead.
Well, our story tonight was adapted for radio by Virginia Wells and directed by Herbert Lateau. Sherwood Latimer was played by Everett Clark, Catherine by Muriel Bremner, and Slake by Wilms Herbert. The orchestra was under the direction of Joseph Colicchio with original music by Emil Soderstrom. This has been another in our series of programs which features some of the most powerful and dramatic short stories ever written, and we hope you've liked it. 2 weeks from tonight, we have a story for you by Albert Wetjen. It's called Fortitude. And after hearing it, I think you'll agree with me that it's one of the most compelling sea stories ever written. In the character of the first mate, who through sheer force of will keeps his men alive on a barren island, you meet a person you won't forget. It's a good story, so try to be with us. Until then, this is Nelson Armstead saying good night and good reading. This program was a Chicago production. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.